Welcome, everyone. I'm Reba Sparrow, and today it's all about the pegging on the Mystery Box Show podcast. Today's story is one that is close to my heart, and I remember being really excited when it was pitched to us, excited to share this experience because I think it is so relatable. In fact, I relate to it so hardcore, but it's not talked about that often. And so I do want to give a small content notification or trigger warning, if you will. There are moments where the story talks about body image, in fact, most of it, in addition to bulimia. It's not the focus of the story, but body image is sort of continues throughout the arc. And so in case anyone is particularly sensitive to that, please take care of yourselves in any way you see fit. But I do think this is a really fantastic story and we are excited for you to hear it. So please welcome into your ear holes, Izzy Bonnie.
I don't remember a time when I wasn't disturbed by the contours of my body. That place where my skin meets the rest of the universe. See, I would watch my peers come in after recess, and I wondered what it would be like to pull off your sweatshirt and feel the kiss against each sinewy rib. What it would be like to pull on fresh socks in the morning over a protruding ankle bone. And maybe most of all, that unabashed feeling of what it would be like to fling yourself down the gaping mouth of an orange slide without wondering who would be unceremoniously crushed at the bottom. Every day after school, I used to rush home to watch Xena Warrior Princess because there was so much in that I related to. I was pretty outspoken. Sometimes I was even brave, and I was so opinionated. But there was something about me that was grotesquely wrong that separated me from my childhood heroine. See, I was a fat girl. And in the early 90s, that felt like that was probably the worst thing I could have been. But there was something that I did treasure about myself, and that was my intellect. You know that kid that always has their hand raised first in class? That was me. I was always ready to tell you exactly why I thought F. Scott Fitzgerald was better than Hemingway. And if you asked me my favorite color, it was yellow because of its thematic reoccurrence in the short story Spring in Fialta by Vladimir Nabokov. So as you might have guessed, this didn't earn me many friends. And a lot of the taunting was pretty mild at first when we were reading The Scarlet Letter, which is one of my favorites. They came up with an adorable nickname for me, Heifer Prin, which I thought was actually kind of clever. And sometimes they made a game of seeing who could come up behind me unseen and grab a fistful of fat. And perhaps the worst was the lunchroom, because I was always chastised if I ate too much or for trying too hard by eating too little. So eventually I just pushed in my plastic chair and left. But I was followed by 3 8th grade boys the year ahead of me, one of them wielding a fork from the lunchroom. And as I felt it penetrate my skin, he said, "I wonder if she bleeds bacon grease." And for the record, I bleed blood. Afterwards, I slunk off to the girls' bathroom and barricaded myself in the last stall. And I leaned over the toilet, and I started to prod with my ragged nails at the soft cathedral arch of my throat until I found the right spot. And then stomach acid and chocolate milk just came erupting from my body. And I thought I would be revolted, but it was this heady and exciting feeling. And I knew then that no matter how much I treasured my intellect, nothing could be as valuable as becoming invisible, because I never wanted to feel that vulnerability again, and I never wanted to feel like I was at another person's mercy. And so I found solitude in just disappearing. I remember the next time I felt truly seen. It was the summer after my freshman year of college in a small upstate New York liberal arts school, and I was now back in my hometown, mortified, and my friend had just invited me to this little pop-punk house show at a barn in southern Maine. So I spent the entire morning trying to figure out what to wear and eventually decided on this sort of amorphous red cardigan that sort of had the look of a, she might be chubby or just wearing a red sweater in the middle of August. And then I smeared my eyes with a dull eyeliner pencil, tucked it in my pocket, and we were off. And when we arrived at the barn, it was pulsing with this pop-punk heartbeat, and over the top was twanging the fastest banjo I had ever heard. I barely had the chance to grab a glass of wine before my friend just dragged me to the front of the room. And I surveyed the band, their tattoos, their harmonies. And in the corner was this banjo player. He had these Coke bottle glasses perched atop his hooked nose, faded jeans, dirty white sneakers, and the smattering of chest hair that ran from the base of his neck all the way down to his navel. And I thought maybe he was looking at me. And yet there are so many other people in the room that I chastised myself for it. And after the set, I immediately ran to the bathroom to do what was natural for me. And yet I saw the shadow pacing underneath the bathroom door. And I didn't want anyone to hear me. And I was already taking up so much time that I just pushed open the restroom door and found my hand embedded in this damp, mossy chest hair. It was the banjo player. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to. Nah, don't even worry about it. I apologize, that's my Brooklyn accent. And he looked me up and down and said, "What's with the sweater, Mr. Rogers?" And I wanted to say, "Well, I hate my body," but that didn't seem like the right move, so I just said, "Won't you be my neighbor?" You have really quick fingers. I mean, you were good. And he looked at me and said, "You know, I like the first way better. You are good and you have really quick fingers." And then I immediately ran across the barn and tried to squeeze the dregs of the space bag into my cup, and it was empty. And then I heard him behind me. "You know, I have half a bottle of wine in the bus." So I followed him out to the little white bus with the words "The Reckless" painted across, and he handed me the bottle of wine. I took a huge, "please drown my nerves" swig. And then he plucked it from my hand, took a sip himself, set it down, and then his lips were instantly on mine. And it tasted like nicotine and sweat and wine, and I instantly just dug my teeth into his lip, and he let out this guttural moan, "Do it again." So I did. "Put your arms around me." So I did. "Pull me closer." So I did. "Finger my asshole." Well, I had never really been faced with this request before, but my hands were in a fairly convenient position, so I just sort of slunk my fingers down his tailbone to the point that kind of felt like a taut elastic band and just slipped my finger inside. And that seemed to be the right move. "You like my asshole?" "Sure." "Is it nice and tight for you?" "Yep." "You wanna fuck me in the asshole?" "Yeah." "You wanna put your hard cock in my asshole and have me ride it?" "Theoretically, And before I could really get an explanation, the sound of voices approaching kind of ruined everything. So he stopped writhing against my lumpy cardigan and I pulled back. And it was his bandmates, so he introduced me to them and then walked me back to the barn. And I could tell on his face that he was disappointed, which was really encouraging for me. He said, "Well, Mr. Rogers, we have to go back to Brooklyn tonight if I'm ever in the neighborhood again." Well, actually, New York is the neighborhood. And his face lit up. He said, "No fucking way. No fucking way you're from New York City, you sexy pegging vixen, you." What's your name?" And in a move that was kind of smooth, even for me, I pulled my eyeliner pencil out of my pocket and scratched my number onto his arm. "Izzy. My name is Izzy. Steve. I look forward to you pegging me in New York City." So the thrill of that evening was quickly replaced with panic because I don't know if you know, but I didn't know what pegging was. But I really wanted to give him the impression that I did. So after a couple of Google searches, it seemed to me that essentially pegging was the utilization of a strap-on to penetrate another's asshole. So you can read a lot about it. And you can even go out and buy your own strap-on. But it's hard to become an expert if you've never actually pegged someone. So a couple of weeks later, I was at the Harlem 125th stop waiting for Steve to pick me up. I had borrowed this ill-fitting floral dress from a roommate. I'd cut my bangs too short. And in my purse, I had a bag of stale weed, a pack of cigarettes, and my new blue dildo. Eventually, I heard the rumble of a car, and he approached in this beige convertible Mustang. And he looked me up and down and said, "You look different in the daylight." My heart began to sink. And maybe he saw it in my face, because he leaned forward and he said, "Clearer, I like the view." And I basically just jumped over the door of that convertible Mustang and cozied up beside him. We went for dinner that night and strolled around the city under a steely moon, smoking spliffs, and eventually ended up back at his sublevel flat. And he excused himself to take a shower to get ready. And I was terrified. I removed the dildo from my purse and set it on the bedside table and willed myself to know what to do with it. And then he came back from the bathroom, wrapped in a towel. Before he could even do anything, I gave him a wink and excused myself and ran immediately to the restroom. And I looked at myself in the mirror. And I felt if I were just a few ounces lighter, I could either walk out there with a little bit more confidence, or I could maybe slither out of the bathroom window and catch the next train back to campus. So I knelt down in front of the toilet. But I didn't want to. I didn't really want to discard this nice dinner that an attractive and interesting gentleman had just put on his credit card, which was a first for me. And I also didn't want to discard that feeling that I was this confident, sexy, pegging goddess that I had pretended to be all evening. So I made myself a deal. I was going to go back out there, and if I fucked the whole thing up, I could go back to campus, spend the next day binging on everything I could find and purging it until my esophagus was raw. But if I didn't fuck it up, I had to try. So I went back out, and I opened the door, and there he was on the bed, towel removed, completely erect. And he took the strap on, and he knelt down in front of me, and he helped me into the harness. And I had always been so aware of the exact place where my skin met the rest of the universe. And yet, when he looked up at me and said, "I like your cock," I knew it wasn't really my appendage, but it absolutely was. And so I set him back on the bed and moved his legs up towards his head. And I warmed him up with my fingers and ample lube, just like I had read about on Google. And then I entered him, And he was looking up at me with this vulnerability, this, I am completely at your mercy. And I knew that feeling. And yet, I didn't want to cause him any pain. I just wanted to cause him the most immense pleasure. And in that moment, I was Xena Warrior Princess. Except, instead of a chakram, I had a blue cock. But I pulled it off exquisitely. He was completely unaware that that was my first time pegging. And afterwards, I sat on his face and he ate me out, and I wasn't even worried about the unflattering angle, so all in all, a pretty good night. The next morning, I woke up and he wasn't beside me. So I draped his robe over my shoulder and went out to the kitchen where I heard some clattering. And it was his roommate and him, and he was sort of bent over this steel pot with a pair of salad tongs. And I felt a little awkward, so I said, "What are you cooking?" And he plunged the salad tongs into the pot and withdrew my silicone phallus. "Dick soup," he said. And his roommate looked like a little perplexed and kind of aghast, and he looked between us and said, "Whose dick is it?" And in that moment, I started to feel that familiar shame creeping up inside of me, like I probably should run. And yet, I wasn't ready to forget who I had been last night. That confidence, that strength, that dash of warrior princess. So I took a deep breath, and I looked him dead in the eye, and I said, "That's my dick. You should see what I can do with it."
That was Izzy Bonnie, everyone. Like I said, I think that that was a very important story. I think body image is something that it's out there, but we don't talk about it in the really, really personal, intense, detailed ways that Izzy really captures in this story, and the lengths that we will go to feel valid and worthy. And it's not just women, although it is largely women or female identified people, you know, it's everyone. I think this is such a universal story. And even if you've never had those feelings yourself about your own body, I think it's important to have your eyes opened to consider what other people might be feeling. And it's interesting, as I mentioned, I relate to Izzy in this story, and I've always felt that way about my body, especially as a younger person. And the older I get, and the more people I talk to, and the more experiences I have, the more I'm able to acknowledge that people whose bodies look like mine, or people's whose bodies look very different than mine, even people who I consider having the perfect bodies, it was shocking to me and eye-opening to learn that even those people have the same thoughts about their bodies that I have and that Izzy has, and that this is a universal problem, the way that we think about our bodies in relationship to sex, in relationship to showing up in the world, to our confidence, to our relationships. And so again, I really do think this was a very important story to share, to let everyone know that, hey, you're not alone. Let's keep talking about this. Let's keep the conversation going, and let's all strive to really embrace ourselves. Let us know what you thought about this story. You can reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, or email. All of the links are at mysteryboxshow.com. You can support us at patreon.com/mysteryboxshow, where you can have early episodes of our podcasts, confession corner videos, special gifts, and so much more. The music in this episode comes from our good friend Farnell Newton and the Othership Connection. Our audio engineer is Greg Keenan at Sound Minion Studios in Longmont, Colorado. Thanks to our production assistant, Nicole Perkins, my co-producer, Eric Scheuer. I'm your mistress of ceremonies, Reba Sparrow. On our next episode, communication is key.
So the next day at school, everybody pretended nothing happened. I'm the only one like, does nobody remember what happened? My hand was up your shirt.
Tune in next time on the Mystery Box Show podcast.